Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the king of co-hosts himself, Kyle JCRB Kraus.
Well, at least I'm the king of something. Hello, Ian. Now,
hello, Kyle. This episode, we have a very controversial topic, literally pitting brother against brother. My younger brother threatened to unwish me a happy birthday because of my stance on this.
Well, at least he didn't threaten to unwish you out of existence.
This is true. This is true. But we're going to be talking about Godzilla, King of the Monsters. But first, we have lots of other stuff to talk about.
We do.
Yes, yes, yes. So much news to give to you, the fine people who listen to this show.
Yes, we do have a lot of things to talk about. Mainly, first off, we have an update to Bumblecast Gaming, where our streams are now going to be live and available public for everyone to watch as they are happening.
Yeah, we put it to a vote because we don't have huge turnouts for the patron-exclusive streams. And we said, you know what? Why not we share with all the peoples of the internet? And the patrons, in their incredible generosity, said, yes, take away this exclusive feature from us. Share it with all the peoples of the internet. So here we are,
yes,
handing it out like candy. You don't need to check it for nails. This is premium, pristine, grade A, finely cut. I'm running out of things to call it.
New
video game streaming.
New fresh Bumblecast content. Bumblecast gaming content, I should say. I should
straight
specify.
Off the vine.
Indeed. Don't worry, we're not getting rid of the Discord exclusive recordings or anything like that. But we thought the game streams being public would be pretty cool, especially because we had really good turnouts for the Team Sonic Racing streams and a couple of other things that we've done recently. So, and we're also, with that, switching over full-time to YouTube instead of trying to split time between Twitch and YouTube. I don't think that was really working out so well for us, so we're just going to try and focus our best on YouTube and keep things there for now. Unless you are like adamant, like, no, you need to go back to Twitch. No, come back to Twitch. But for now, we're just going to focus everything on YouTube and stay the course there.
Moving on to more general news, which is to say video game news, because that's what we live and breathe.
A lot of
new Pokemon news coming out, and this is right before E3. I'm sure there'll be even more, but what we have so far, that one tantalizing title that I know everyone was chomping at the bit for, Pokemon Sleep.
I'm ready to sleep. I mean, just I'm ready to sleep. Not Pokemon Sleep, just regular sleep.
I wasn't even paying attention to it. Does it like monitor how long you sleep and gives you points for it?
I don't know. I just know that they're not content with consuming your every waking moment. So now they must infiltrate your dreams with Pokemon.
There's some disturbing stuff in Pokemon, man. Some of the ghost types know Dream Eater.
Yeah,
that
I know.
Does damage when you're sleeping. I just...
There's some of the music in the first game in... what's the name of that ghost?
Lavender Town.
Oh, man.
I refuse to listen to that.
That's some creepy, creepy stuff. I think it's kind of like you have like a... Either you put your phone or a sensor underneath your pillow while you sleep, and if you sleep well, you get bonuses related to... It's kind of like Pokemon Go, except for sleeping instead of walking, I guess. It keeps you... It's supposed to incentivize you to sleep well.
That's what it takes... I mean, Pokemon Go got people out, it got them socializing, it got them exploring their regions. There were countless stories of folks who had children with autism or social disorders seeing major breakthroughs for their children because of the app. So if sleep gets us to actually stop what we're doing and get healthier, fine, cool. You know what? Whatever. If it works, it works.
If Pokemon Sleep can fix my sleep problems, it will be a freaking miracle. Oh, man. But in real Pokemon news, I'm sure this is more your speed than mine, but we do have actual Pokemon games coming out as well.
Yeah, Sword and Shield, the next major installment to the true franchise line, coming to the Switch, which is a portable system. So it makes enough sense. And I don't know, Kyle. I'm not as jazzed on this gen as last one, just from what we've seen so far.
Did Aaliyah just call you a liar?
Yeah, Lee did yell liar from the other side. Okay. It did get picked up.
Thought that's what I heard.
You're part of the show now, hon! I mean, so don't
what
get
you,
me wrong.
What are you lying about this time, Ian?
Okay, so the designs I'm liking so far, they actually look like Pokemon. Okay. Except for the legendaries. They look dumb. They're over-designed, but whatever. The memes that have come out of them are fantastic.
Yeah.
I like the open world styled adventuring. That looks pretty cool. But the gimmick of the big chunky transformations, just whatever. Not wild about it. Not wild that you need to do team raids to unlock certain critters in the field. I don't like anything that you could access single player is locked behind a multiplayer option. That doesn't matter if it's Pokemon. I just don't like that in games in general.
Right, I don't either.
And, I don't know, maybe something will come along to really grab my interest, but so far, everything that's been put out, it's like, that's nice. That looks kind of cool. I'm not really too nuts about it. The last one, the Alola region, I was all about that, you know, the move to the 3D, you know, true 3D, and the islands and mixing it up a little bit so that, you know, this is a region that doesn't have the traditional gems. And I don't know, that one I was more into. This one, I mean, we'll probably get it. It's a Pokemon game, not gonna lie, but
of course,
I don't know. I'm not chomping at the bit this time. Maybe they'll reveal some critter down the line that I'll have to have, like Corviknight. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like this pitch black, angry at everything crow. That's flying steel. I mean, this thing is a literal murder of crows just by itself. That's pretty cool. I dig it.
I don't think I've seen it.
It's
that sounds awesome, although, though.
I saw on Twitter somebody else said it should have been called Nev Armor.
Kind of like, oh, no.
Yeah. When we eventually get the game and I catch the thing, that's the first thing I'm doing.
That's your name. That's your name for that? Okay.
Right there.
All
right. Because I had a honchkrow named Lenore for the longest time. But
oh, man.
I don't know. I'm hoping something will come along that's like grabs me. But for right now, it's like, okay, it's coming. That's kind of neat. We'll see.
I just hope that the female trainer specifically goes incomprehensibly Scottish. Because that would be perfect. Just completely just can't understand a word she's saying. And you finally have a Nintendo character drop an F-bomb, but it's so incomprehensible that you can't understand the F-bomb anyway, so it doesn't matter. It sounds great. I'm ready for it. If that's what they do, I'm ready for it. I can't wait.
Yeah, the opposing trainer has no idea what to do because he can't understand the commands being issued.
Exactly.
Did she just order Haggis Metronome? What?
Perfect. I love it. That's what I want.
Also, another announcement that I saw just before recording, the next entry in the Tales of series is coming out. Tales of Arise.
A Tales of Arise? What?
Arise.
A Tales of
like, Arise Chicken. Chicken Arise.
Okay. Why are they using a real word? They're supposed to use a made up word. It's supposed to be a made up word, except there was Tales of the Abyss, I guess, so that's not a made up word. And there's like Tales of Destiny. But like Fantasia, that's a made up word. Symphonia, that's a made up word.
No, actually, Fantasia is a real word.
I know it technically is, but come on. It's a Disney movie.
But with a PH, maybe not. But
it's a Disney movie. Come on.
Which is based off of an actual word, which is Fantasia.
I am aware.
I looked it up for a project that never went anywhere.
Okay.
Regardless.
Okay, fine. But still, yes.
And the story seems to suggest it's a new entry, you know, its own thing.
Okay.
But the female character, who is kind of conspicuously kept out of view for the most part, is suspiciously Lila-like from Zestiria. Thank you. So, I don't know. It's way too early to say anything. Hopefully E3 will give us some more insights. No release date, just platforms, and it's PS4, Xbox One, PC, maybe Switch. Mm. We'll see how it goes.
Alrighty. And of course, the biggest news, The Genesis Mini had its full lineup unveiled for all regions. So I should say the Genesis and Mega Drive Mini. And it's looking pretty dang good.
It is a robust list and with some surprising stuff.
Some very nice surprises in there. I am like super, super excited to see some of these games that really just don't get a whole heck of a lot of love or just are not as well known as they should be. Like Alicia Dragoon or Dynamite Heady. Those two are like, unveiling those two was like, yes, finally. They actually acknowledge those two games. An English translated version of Monster Hunter or Monster World 4, not Monster Hunter World 4. That's a different game. That's a different game completely. No, Monster World 4 is pretty freaking awesome. There are a few questionable inclusions, but overall, I would say that it is an excellent lineup. You got Mega Man, the Wily Wars for one.
Yeah.
So, let's see, what else do we got? The Earthworm Jim is also a good one. Castlevania Bloodlines, which is freaking great. Gunstar Heroes, yes, please.
I'm really, really surprised that Castle of Illusion and World of Illusion are in there.
Yes.
Because what did they have to do to get the Mickey Mouse licenses?
What? Yeah, and that kind of surprises me. Also, I'm a little surprised that we don't have Aladdin because of the inclusion of those two. So they were clearly in some talks with Disney.
That was such a good game.
Aladdin is very good, yes. It's better than I remembered it when I played it recently. It's definitely a excellent platformer. And I'm really surprised that it didn't make it because it was the second best-selling Sega Genesis game in Europe and in America. Right behind Sonic 2, I want to say. So, yeah, pretty crazy that that one didn't make it in. The only things really missing, I would say, is some sort of sports game representation. Something like, like even if they went for Mutant League Football, instead of going after like a licensed sports game, like an actual sports game simulation, even something like Mutant League Football would have been a good inclusion, I think, because that game is freaking awesome. Super fun to play. But yeah, other than that, it's a very solid lineup overall. There's only like a very small handful of games where I'm like, you could probably trade that out for something else and it would be better, but you know, can't please everybody all the time. A brand new port of the arcade classic Darius to the Genesis is also great. And a remade port of Tetris is also pretty freaking awesome. Those two bonuses are just add a little bit more to the overall package.
Not that I'm knocking Tetris, because, you know, it's kind of like the quintessential game.
Sure.
But Tetris is kind of ubiquitous. It's everyone. Your calculator can run Tetris. It's why is this so special in terms of Tetrises?
Well, it's a new port of, I believe, the arcade version, I want to say. And there was a Tetris game released on the Genesis, but it wasn't great. And this is supposed to be a major improvement, as far as I know. So, yeah, I definitely like that. That's why it's I think that's why it's a bonus, too, why it's not included as part of the overall intended original package. Having those extra games in there just adds a little bit more to it, you know? I appreciate that. The one thing I don't appreciate is the fact that they included fighting games, but they're only giving you a three-button controller. Not a great move. I do not want to play Eternal Champions and Street Fighter 2 with a three-button controller. And I don't want to play Virtua Fighter 2 for the Genesis at all because that game is garbage. I don't know why they included that. That's like, of all the games on the list, that game is easily the one that could go and get replaced with something else.
Yeah, but I want to say I heard somewhere that it will support six-button USB controllers.
Yes, it will.
So you can swap it out.
Yeah, but you have to pay more money. And the Japanese version comes with six-button controllers, Ian.
Oh, wow. It's just like the 90s all over again.
Yeah, the Japanese version comes with the six-button controllers, while in the U.S. we only get the three-button controllers, the U.S. and Europe. Japan also gets the completely visual and not not in any form upgrade stack of the Sega CD, Sega Genesis, 32X, and Sonic and Knuckles plus Sonic 1 thing that you can attach to your Genesis Mini. It does nothing. It just turns it into the big tower of power. Tower of Sega power. It does nothing, but it looks awesome. So I can appreciate that. Although I would love some 32X games. I'm not going to lie. I do have a soft spot for a couple of 32X games at least.
Part of me sitting here going, how much would it cost to get one of those? And the other one's like, no, no, no. You have no room. Stop it.
Well, it's a mini, though. It's super tiny.
I mean the Tower of Power. I mean importing that from some scalper.
Oh, you mean the original Tower of Power? Or you mean the, the mini Tower of Power? Well, it's mini, so it's still small. You still get it.
You don't understand how much no space.
I do. I do know how much no space you have, actually. But still, you can stuff it in a corner, so I'm fine. Put it on the balcony. You have a nice showpiece out there. Anyway. All right. Well, I think that's enough beating around the bush. Shall we get to the actual topic at hand? The topic of this episode?
Yeah. Now, same as before, we'll go the non-spoiler route at first.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to tear into this like a Thanksgiving turkey.
I'm going to tear into this like Godzilla tears into any monster that he's fighting, pretty much.
So, if you don't want to be spoiled on it, if you don't want my impotent nerd rage to spoil your fun, just go ahead and jump to the Q&A. We'll see you there. But for now, non-spoilery review. Godzilla King of the Monsters, sequel to Godzilla 2014. Godzilla fights King Ghidorah, and stuff happens.
It was all right.
It drives me up the wall.
I know. And
because I wasn't expecting much, Kyle.
I'll be honest.
It was a Godzilla movie on my birthday, okay? I just wanted some cool monster-on-monster action, and the whole thing was so aggressively mediocre. See, I would be okay if it was just bad. Like, if it was bad, bad. Like, super campy, just atrociously put together. But no, it's not bad at all. It's an easy watch. It's just, it's not good. And there's so many ways that it could have been fine-tuned to be excellent. And I'm going to let you talk now.
I agree with you. It's mediocre. It's not great. And I think really, this is a thing that I harp on like all the time. I think the worst thing a piece of entertainment can be is boring. Like, aggressively boring, especially, but even just regular boring. It's the worst thing, because if something is bad, there's still enjoyment to be had out of it just by laughing at how bad it is. But if something is just boring and dull and there's not really a whole heck of a lot to get out of it, then it's like, that's, to me, is the greatest sin of any sort of entertainment. If you're boring, get out of here. I don't want you. And this movie, it has its moments, but overall, it's kind of boring. So,
but those moments are spectacular.
The moments that it has are like a look into ways the movie could have been improved.
Like, every single monster's introduction is flawless. The understated first appearance of Godzilla, the way that Ghidorah is revealed, the way Mothra is introduced both times. And if you're any passing fan of Godzilla, you know exactly what I mean.
Right.
Rodan's entrance on the scene, the other kaiju, every single one of them showing up, you're like, this is awesome. This is why I am paying money to sit here and watch the big TV. Mwah! Loved it. Great. And I'll even go so far as to say that the first fight that we see of Godzilla, the first round we get of Godzilla versus Ghidorah, great, for the most part.
Yeah.
It has its problems. It's good overall, okay? I enjoyed it immensely. I was getting hyped, and I want to say, well, I won't spoil which round it is, but one of their rematches, because there's a lot of monster fighting, one of the rematches, just the beginning of it, I was, the music, Kyle.
Well,
they
yeah.
threw in the old theme, and I'm getting all pumped, and it's like, yeah, here we go.
The music is the highlight of this movie.
Oh, the music is great. Yeah. The music is great.
Yeah, the way the usage of the theme accompanying the visual of Godzilla just made my neck hair stand on end, like all tingly. Like, it was perfect. That was great. I do not think the music was in any way bad, except for the usage of one song. And we'll get to that later. It's kind of a spoiler. I'm disappointed of the placement of one song. It should have been somewhere else. We'll talk about it. But.
And the designs of the kaiju are great. Godzilla's pretty much as he was in the last film, big old chonky big boy who knows how to throw down.
Yeah.
He looks great. Mothra is a spectacle to behold. I love the fiery molten rock bird that is Rodan. Ghidorah looks phenomenal. There's so many good little elements in here.
Right.
Which I understand makes it seems
like it's just so disappointing that all these little elements just don't come together the way they should.
What kills me is, okay, so the problem, the many problems with Godzilla 2014.
Yeah.
Could be boiled down to too much focus on the squishy humans.
Yep.
Not enough use of the star actors, and not enough monster fight. King of the Monsters has too many squishy people.
Yep.
Not enough focus on the star actors. There's a lot more monster fights, but they're not as good.
They're paced very poorly. I do not like the pacing of the monster fights, especially, but I think of the movie overall, I wasn't a big fan of the pacing. It's an easy watch. It feels pretty brisk, but it's still like, I feel like they could have just tweaked things here and there just to make it that much better. I don't know.
Now, I've gotten a lot of flack for saying this on my personal Facebook, which, okay, I probably should say this. My Facebook is mine. I flattered you guys wanted to send friend requests, but no, I need time away from the internet. Facebook is just me and my family. No friends outside of that. Just me. I need the me time and the them time. And the them time turned into, what is wrong with you? This movie was fun. And I know I'm putting it on this degree of scrutiny that it probably shouldn't receive, but Kyle, and we'll be going into this in just a minute. There's so many easy fixes to tighten it up that would have taken it from a Godzilla movie to, ooh, a Godzilla movie. It could.
Yeah. You got monster.
Checking my heart rate.
I mean, you got monster fighting. There's no shortage of that in this, but. You know, monster fighting is good and all, but I want good monster fighting. I don't want just monster fighting. That's not what I want. I want good monster fighting.
Yeah.
And it's just this movie just doesn't really have that.
No.
Not for the most part. Not really. No.
There's not really a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
That isn't spoiler, because the main plot is forgettable, but that's pretty much any Godzilla movie.
That's true.
Ever.
Yeah.
And you know that the monsters fight, and there's a bunch of them, so...
Who cares what...
That's the movie!
who cares what the humans are doing? They're just stupid. Get them out of here. Move them out of the way. I want to see the giant monsters punch each other. Please!
If you haven't seen it yet, and you think that we're probably being hypercritical of it, which we probably are...
Yeah.
It's at least a watch. I mean, seeing it on a big screen so you get the feel for it, I guess, is something.
There's entertainment value to be had in it, but it could have been so much better. Could have been.
All right, so that's it. We're getting into angry nerd mode.
Time.
You have been warned. We'll see you at the Q&A.
All right.
Kyle, would you like to go first?
I suppose. I don't know. I think, like, I had this weird complaints about Rodan. Like, Rodan kind of goes down like a chump during his only real fight. It's like, what is he doing? What are they doing to poor Rodan? I know he's, like, the Starscream, apparently, who just switches alliances at the drop of the hat. It's like, I don't know what's going on there, but they kind of like just dropped him out real quick. Like they didn't know what to do with him. They just put him in there for fan service and then they just got rid of him. It's like, what the heck are they doing?
Having Rodan go down to Ghidorah, I'm okay with.
I thought he went down to Mothra.
Yeah, hold on. Ghidorah's the big bad. He's supposed to be able to go toe-to-toe with Godzilla. Having him punk Rodan in the air, I feel like, is appropriate enough. And, you know, making him his number two. Sure.
That's fine. That part, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the final fight with where he's fighting with Mothra. Yeah.
Which you don't see from... you have two enormous... iconic kaiju, big winged things flying over a city, and the most we see of them is kind of flitting off the top of the screen while the stupid people are yelling in the Humvee, and the soldier we don't care about is bleeding out, and they're looking for the child who we don't care about. They already found the literal plot device. Show me the bird fighting the giant butterfly.
Yeah, there were two literal plot devices in this movie. One of them was completely misused. The other one was...
I mean, Mothra was... You want to talk about misused? Mothra was misused.
Mothra.
She looked gorgeous, but she did nothing. She's somehow hovering in place, creating a waypoint beacon so you can get to the quest marker that is Godzilla,
uh-huh.
And then goes away, and then shows up very briefly to tag team on Ghidorah, and I'm like, yeah, all right, this is where we're going. Okay, here's my main beef. One of my main beefs. I have beefs. I have a butchery here, Kyle.
Okay.
One of the major complaints here is this is King of the Monsters. You know, they say there's 17 kaiju in the world, and I imagine they don't have the budget to show them all. Sure. But you have Rodan and Mothra and Godzilla and Ghidorah all together in one arena, and they don't fight each other.
No.
You have Rodan as Ghidorah's second in command here, his Starscream, his kind of go-to boy, and he doesn't go after Godzilla at all. He only shows up to run interference on Mothra, and then we don't even see the fight until Mothra gets in a flesh wound, and Rodan's like, oh, no, I'm out. Boo.
Yeah. Rodan
Mothra
just goes down like...
Mothra doesn't use Gale Force winds, doesn't use any of the powder attack, except maybe her ashes reinvigorate Godzilla. It's not really clear. No sonic screaming. Just this random singer that she now has, and...
Yeah, Mothra was like, what are they doing? They're not doing anything with Mothra. Why? Mothra is awesome. I love Mothra, but horribly, horribly misused.
And more to the point of the fights, like in Godzilla 2014, that glorious 20-minute segment where we actually got what we wanted, that was such a perfect Godzilla film if you just looked at that bit. Because you had the scale of the monsters. Godzilla is walking between buildings. He feels heavy. There's a particular shot where the flying Muto comes at him, and it looks like almost like a prop on wires, the way that they have animated it. So it has that sense of the old school films.
Right.
But because it's got the, you know, realism to the CG, it's almost eerie the way it flies in. And the fights themselves are interesting. One of the most satisfying moments is when the Muto's flying in on Godzilla and he just has that snort of, all right, you've been a pain in my ass this entire movie. Tail whip into a building. Oh, it was satisfying. When he finally overpowers the Mamamoto and holds the head open and the spines are charging up and he blasts that beam straight down her gullet. Such a visceral, powerful, cathartic moments like, yeah, kill that thing, Godzilla. I wholesale endorse the murder of this creature. Give me more. And when that movie ended, I was like, okay, great. They know what to do with the monster fights. The next movie, they're going to get it perfect. And then this film comes along and the monsters are too fluid. There's no weight to them for the most part. They're almost bouncy the way they move around. And since most of the scenes take place in a storm or in smoke or in clouds or in a completely leveled urban environment, there's no sense of scale.
Yeah.
You know?
And there's no
In the opening fight when they're in the Arctic and they're playing kickball with the stupid airplane and all the people inside are going boing, 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 boing. Even that, it's such a low camera angle. All you're seeing is Godzilla's ankle. You don't really get a sense of the size. that one shot when they're in Baltimore and Godzilla's charging between the buildings with the fighter planes coming in to help, and Ghidorah is doing that kind of weird neck zoomy thing and they're charging through the buildings. That was dead on. That was the movie that I wanted. And we only get snapshots of it here and there. Most of it is these really up close tight shots where you can't tell where half the action is, or they're just shoving each other into buildings and
here's another one of my complaints. They used self-sacrifice to save Godzilla plot point 3 times in an hour. 3 times! With 3 different creatures sacrificing themselves. Because you've got... what's his name?
Watanabe.
Watanabe, yes. Okay, Watanabe... I was thinking of the character's name.
We don't care about that. It's him.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Ken Watanabe sacrificing himself to reinvigorate Godzilla with a nuke. You have Mothra sacrificing herself to repower Godzilla again?
Maybe.
And then you have the lady, who cares, who like drives away with the plot device to lure Ghidorah away from Godzilla so Godzilla can like come back again and reinvigorate himself, and he can come back as superpowered Godzilla. And then, yeah, it's like 3 times you're gonna pull this same thing 3 times where someone has to sacrifice themselves to save Godzilla. Why are you doing this movie? Come up with something else.
The sequence where Ken Watanabe finally gets to act his role and act in general,
I was fine with that part, but then using it 2 more times was just like, what are you doing?
I love that moment until he takes his glove off and he is in a subterranean cavern that is so hot and so radioactive that he is literally dying of radiation poisoning right there, despite the suit. He takes his glove off, and there's no blistering, there's no burning. I don't want to see the man tortured, but come on! When you have a setting that is literally on fire, and they have made a point of saying, you are going to die doing this, not just setting up the nuke, just going there is going to kill you, and then they do that. It's this little detail that didn't need to be there.
Right.
Him taking off the helmet at the last second to say goodbye, I would buy that. But it's the little details, Kyle. It's the little details.
He took off his glove to push the number one away. He didn't push anything else. He pushed the number one. It's like if you needed fine motor controls to control a number pad to push a couple numbers, that would be one thing. But he literally pushes the number one and then a giant button above it. It's like, what are you doing?
Another little detail, since we're in this particular segment. The whole nuking Godzilla kind of boosts his power level. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Then the guy says it worked too well. He's going to explode. And he starts getting the red veins and he starts doing the red glow. That is Meltdown Godzilla. That is from Godzilla versus Destoroyah. That is a direct callback to one of the most iconic movie moments in the entire franchise. And this movie is lousy with references. So you know it was intentional. And then he uses that power to defeat Ghidorah, which by itself, I'm okay with. It's the presentation that is flawed. If Science Guy, whoever his name was, because they were the squishy humans, who cares, had said it worked too well, Godzilla is, you know, putting out way too much radiation. Is he going to explode? I don't know. We've never seen anything like this. I hope he can handle it. Otherwise, we need to get out of Dodge. Open that window of plausibility, because all we have is the setup is he's going to explode, and if you know anything about Godzilla lore, you assume he's going to explode, because that's what happened the last time he was Meltdown Godzilla.
Right.
Instead, he uses it as his spirit bomb for the fight, and it was cool and all, but there was no window of opportunity to build it up. There was no narrative way to really construct it. It just kind of came out of nowhere, and then he shakes it off like, gave me the shivers. It is wrong and bad and could have been done better. And if it had been done better, I wouldn't be yelling at a microphone to like the five people who are listening and rolling their eyes saying, Ian, get a life.
I do have to say another complaint and another funny thing. It sure is convenient that Ghidorah comes with his own CG obscuring dark gray storm surrounding him at all times, meaning all the fights are in the rain and in the dark. So you can't see what's going on or understand anything that's happening because there's so much freaking water and the sky and everything is so freaking dark and there's no lighting. Have these fights in the daytime. The sun, put the sun out. Like, I don't get it. Is this a thing that they invented for the movie, for this movie? Or does Ghidorah actually have a storm following him at all times? Is this a thing that happens? Or is this something they did as an excuse to where they could make, like, cut the CG budget down by making it darker so you can't see as much?
I meant to research this. I don't remember off the top of my head. I want to say
I don't remember
that
either.
It's mentioned in one film at least, but there's been a number of different Ghidorah films. And
yeah.
Another detail thing, okay? I like that they specified that he's not of Earth, that he is an alien kaiju.
Exactly, yeah.
That's a nice callback. And using the Oxygen Destroyer to reveal that is kind of a neat twist, but you trot out the Oxygen Destroyer like it ain't a big thing. It was the bomb that killed the Godzilla.
Right.
Okay? It's what set up Destroyer. We've already talked about this. If at the big Senate hearing, that was a waste of time anyway, they had one of the general people just cut off the Monarch folks and say, Senator, we already have a counter defensive in development. We call it the Oxygen Destroyer. It will destroy anything God didn't put on this planet within a 2-mile radius. That one line at the beginning of the film tells you, okay, they have it. Instead of, we're in the middle of an action sequence. Oh, and by the way, General, someone who doesn't really want to be on camera, we launched a missile at you. We're kind of pulling an Avengers here. Oh, like Tony Stark's going to fly in and put it through a wormhole. It's just going to blow up a bunch of fish.
I thought the...
It's basic storytelling, Kyle! You put the gun on the mantle in the first act so it can go off by the third!
Yeah, it's the Deus Ex Oxygen, and it was stupid. It was completely pointless. Why did they do that? Why did they even call it the Oxygen Destroyer other than as like a fan service? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Oxygen Destroyer from the original movie, Why even call it that? Just say, oh, we're sending in a weapon. Oh, we're sending in a nuke. It's like, well, okay. First of all, I think they established nukes were bad and would actually make them more powerful, but whatever. I don't know. There's so many little things.
So much trouble to reference all these old films. All the Monarch sites are numbered after the release dates of Godzilla films. All this love to the franchise, and they don't use any of the kaiju? You have 17 kaiju and counting. You can't put Anguirus in the film. He is the Krillin of Godzilla, okay? He doesn't have to do anything impressive. He just has to show up for one scene. And you're like, hey, that's a cool-looking giant CG Anguirus because he needs to be in the film. You've got a giant spider popping out of the ground, and it is not Kumonga? You have a giant spider. Why do you not... Do you know how cool a full CG updated King Caesar would have looked instead of Turtle Mountain? I don't care about Turtle Mountain, who can apparently walk from Munich to Boston. Aragon! Ibria something!
I'm wondering if it's a rights issue. That's the only thing I could think of maybe why they didn't do that.
But
and I agree.
Got the license. You think it would be wholesale?
Not necessarily. Isn't Rodan?
If it was a stupid rights issue, I will concede that that's a raw deal. And the new kaiju they made are cool looking. Aside from Mountain Turtle, he's kind of boring. But especially Behemoth, the Gorilla Mammoth. That thing looks awesome.
Yeah, the Gorilla Mammoth is really cool.
He's cool. I'm glad he made it, but not at the cost of the.
Yeah. Yeah, I do like a giant spider coming out of the ground in Arizona and destroying my hometown, though. That's pretty awesome. Even though we only got to see it for a couple seconds. I'm like, dude, there's a giant spider destroying Phoenix, Arizona. That's pretty rad. Like, come and on. Even then,
when we barely see the other kaiju, all they're doing is knocking down buildings.
Well.
And not in a fun way. They're just kind of, oops.
Yeah. But still, just, you know.
Do something interesting with it. Come on.
Giant spider coming out of the ground in Arizona is actually pretty fitting. It might have been a little more fitting if it were a giant scorpion instead of a giant spider. But, you know, I'll take it. Giant spiders are a thing here. Pretty common. So, it fits. I like it. I'm down with that. So, but it's just so weird that, it, like, yeah, you think they, if they were able to use other monsters, other previously established kaiju, rather than coming up with new ones, you think they would have done that instead, considering how heavy this movie leans on, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, fan service. But I don't know. There might be something to do with rights issues on there. Because wasn't Rodan, like, originally not even part of the Godzilla mythology? He was his own separate creature that they eventually rolled into Rodan, Godzilla. Yeah.
His mate.
Right.
And then he kind of got folded into the greater kaiju lore.
And I thought Mothra was the same thing. Maybe not, but...
That I'm not as sure about.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know for sure, but yeah, Rodan's kind of... I don't know if he... I don't know if the license for Rodan is a separate thing. I don't know. It all probably boils down to legal things, rights issues. Pretty unfortunate they couldn't put in like some actually established monsters before. Hell, throw in like American Godzilla in there. You've done that. They did that. Japan did that. So we can do that again. We can throw in Iguana Godzilla.
Now, you had a gripe about one of the musical cues.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's not really a cue so much because they didn't use it during the movie. They used it over the ending credits. They used Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla, well, a cover of it, over the ending credits. They should have used it during the final battle. If you're gonna finally put in Blue Oyster Cult's Godzilla into one of these movies, you should be using it during the giant monster fight. I don't know. That's just my complaint about that. Like, come on, you're putting this over the end credits? Seriously? I want to hear this. Like, Godzilla's down for the count. He's down. Uh-oh. Mothra's sacrificing herself. Uh-oh. Previously almost kind of evil lady sacrificing herself. Getting Ghidorah away from her. Uh-oh, Godzilla's waking back up. Uh-oh, he's turning into meltdown mode. Oh, and then that guitar starts up. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, yeah. Nope, didn't happen. Like, what the heck? What are you doing?
All right. One last thing for me, and I'm all out. Okay. I have spent my rage juice.
All right.
This is how they could have tightened up the film to be more interesting, more concise, and just better in general. Step one, delete Mark. Mark serves no purpose other than to tear down everyone around him.
Delete all the humans.
He has
really
been out of Monarch for 5 years and hates Godzilla, but he's the one telling Ken Watanabe, the head of Monarch, the lead researcher, how to deal with Godzilla. No, sir. Screw you. They can't get the bay doors to open to save all the extras that you've forgotten about already and the soldiers you don't care about. They don't have anyone else on crew with a manual release. Just one guy stabbing at the one button on the keyboard going, I can't get it to open. No, absolutely not. He did nothing for the story. He was not relatable. He served no purpose other than to drag everything down. So Mark, he's gone. We open with Dr. Bad Mom and the daughter in San Francisco during the previous film, because that was a great opening. That's a fantastic opening. And have her calling for her son and dead husband. They don't respond. We assume they're dead. We flash forward. She's in the Chinese base thinking back on it. all right, cool. We set up that she has personal experience and loss from Godzilla. Lovely. Then we've got the daughter on the laptop, and she's talking to Watanabe because he's the main guy of Monarch, damn it. And that establishes that they're also part of Monarch. Okay, cool. There's a little bit of intrigue there. Things proceed pretty much as the film had. She's got the plot device. She's trying to see if she can control larval Mothra. Doesn't go quite right. She gets it to work. Huzzah. And then Lieutenant Lannister, because that's the only reason they cast him, is to just to be a snarky version of Tywin Lannister. They come in, they shoot all the researchers, and you're like, oh no, the bad guys have the ladies. Okay, that's cool. That's a nice cold open. Then we go to the Senate scene, and you've got the gangly bearded guy who says that he's new to the... So he is the audience's vehicle into the workings of Monarch because he has to ask questions. He has to figure out the hierarchy, and through him, we learn what's going on. During the briefing, we have one of the generals say, we've developed the oxygen destroyer. Surprise! Ha-ha! Gun is on the mantelpiece! And then, oh no, a research center was taken over by the bad guys. We have to leave the hearing and get stuff done. Cool. We're moving along. It's great. We don't have to take a detour to Mark because he's not in the movie.
Right.
As we progress, what we come down to is Dr. Bad Mom does agree with Monarch that the Kaiju are powerful creatures that need to be understood, but she thinks that they've gotten too soft on them, especially Godzilla. These are terrible beasts that need to be controlled. This sets up running theme throughout the entire franchise of man's hubris.
Right.
You know, the whole nuke thing?
Exactly.
She thinks she can control nature. You can't. But that's what she learns. That's the lesson of the movie. Okay, children? Good. Sit. Eat your popsicle. She was contacted by the militant group, which strangely didn't get a name, who said, yo, you're with Monarch, but you lost family. We bet you totally understand that these things are dangerous. Could you help us control them? Wink, wink. So she sides with them. We do the reveal that the shoot up of the base was kind of what she knew was going to happen. She didn't think it would be a total slaughter, so she's not like evil. But she still thinks that, okay, we're going to try to make an omelet out of all these broken eggs. We're going to go forward with this. We're going to control all the Kaiju. Oh, wait. Lieutenant Lannister is freaking insane. He wants to use the control device to unleash the Kaiju, to bring about the global apocalypse that will bring everything back into order. Give her long fifth grade humans are bad lecture to the crazy eco-terrorist.
Yeah.
Give him a motivation. Give Charles Dance something to work with other than just a snark for five scenes. And then you have Dr. Bad Mom's turnaround. She has accidentally brought her daughter into this den of villains. She has created this device that was meant to save humanity, is going to doom it. Oh, look, there's the hubris of man. During all this, the oxygen bomb gets dropped on Godzilla. We have the Ghidorah reveal. He's an alien. Oh, no. Ghidorah's terraformed the planet to suit his needs, not Earth's needs. Now it's gotten completely out of control. Eco-terrorists who tried to control nature couldn't control nature. Hubris of man. Godzilla, he's been weakened. Ken Watanabe, he gets his big scene, wheels out the nuke. Goodbye. Boom, we've got Super Saiyan 2 Goku. He goes out there. We have a fight. We actually have Rodan and Mothra fight things besides each other. And you know what? The girl and the plot device are being handled somewhere else. You know, maybe they escape together and they go back to Monarch with their tail between their legs saying, oh, crap, we did bad. We can use this to mitigate the disaster. Use our technology to assist nature finding a balance rather than trying to control it. You know, like what we're doing with technology today. Meanwhile, we got the fight going on between Godzilla and Ghidorah. We actually pan back to see a real fight, something that's actually satisfying to watch. Oh. And maybe she dies. Dr. Bad Mom dies at the end, you know, as penance for what she's done. I don't know. And then we don't have to worry about Mark. We don't have to worry about digging through the ruins of Boston to find the little girl, which made no sense. We don't have to dwell on any of the no-name soldiers. It could have been so much tighter and to the point with an actual message.
I'd rather watch your version. I'm just going to say that. Yeah. That's really it. I don't really have anything else to add. I'd say just get rid of all the stupid humans and give me 2 hours of monster fighting.
Well, you have to have the stupid humans to, you know, keep the budget reasonable, but...
I don't need a plot. What do I need a plot for? Giant monsters fighting? I'm there. I don't care. But yes, I know. I know you have to have some sort of humans to sort of ground the film in reality, I suppose. I guess. I don't know. It's just funny, because, I don't know. Humans have always been a big part of Godzilla movies, I think more than people realize. People are always like, oh, it's a Godzilla movie, why are there so many people in here? But there's always been a human aspect to Godzilla. I don't know, I'd still rather just fight it.
Well, now that I've depleted my lung capacity and thrown out my voice.
Yeah.
Should we move on to the Q&A?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into the Q&A and wrap that up as quick as we can. Yeah,
pop over to Discord and let them know the comeback.
Yeah. Because we're about an hour in now. So.
I had a lot to be angry about.
I understand. There's a lot to complain about. It's a bunch of little things that add up. Well, let's go ahead and get into the Q&A. You can send us your questions via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com, via Twitter at bumblecast, down in the YouTube comments, or via Patreon comments or private messages or however you want to contact us. First up, priority Q&A question comes from, his name starts with an S, and he's got Matt in there in his name, and he's very scruffy.
Howdy, Scruffy.
Seeing as Tails mentioned his adventures on Coco Island during the recent Twitter takeover, now seemed an ideal time to ask a question I've been wondering about for a while. Do you know if Tails' adventure for the Game Gear is considered canon to the games? If so, which version? Apparently, the Japanese manual implies it's a prequel that took place before Sonic and Tails met, and that Tails actually lived on the island, and that the Chaos Emeralds had been said to have been hidden there since ancient times. The Western manual, however, said that it took place in the present day, 1995, and that Tails was just taking a vacation by himself. That seems to be the version that you were adapting in the comics, but would that version be canon to the game's timeline too? Also, did you ever plan to include Teapup turning into a submarine in the comics like he can in the game? Because when I played the game for the first time after reading Tails' Adventure in Sonic Universe, I was rather surprised when that happened.
Okay. Easiest answer, yeah, I wanted Teapup to be a transformable vehicle robot and just kind of hand wave it as its Tails super tech, but we never got around to that, unfortunately.
It's Tails' version of Rush.
Yeah, there you go. Do not take this as the gospel truth, because I honestly don't know, but if Tails' adventure is considered canon, it will most likely be in the classic era, and... if they're going this way, it would be part of Modern Tales' backstory with the Divergent timeline. And I would assume they would go with the Japanese story before Western story. But all of that is complete guesswork on my part. That may stay buried forever and ever. And the mention in the Twitter takeover was just a little bit of fun fan service.
Alrighty. Next one comes from Andrew D. On Twitter, you mentioned that Sonic Spinball was not canon. Was that officially stated by Sega, or is this an assumption? What other Sonic games aren't canon? While I understand we can't speak for him, Aaron Weber has been known for saying everything is canon, so now I'm curious.
I'm going to go at this in reverse, because I think the ending answers the beginning. First off, I can't speak for Mr. Weber, but... my feeling is that when he says everything is canon, he's very gently trying to get everyone to relax, because what is canon is mutable. I mean, there wasn't such a thing as classic Sonic until very recently. You know, that very idea is new, and it has changed the face of the franchise for us hardcore fans pretty starkly. So what is yes today could be no tomorrow, and vice versa. I have, in my back and forth with Sega, got an idea of what they think is crucial to the key ideas of Sonic, I guess. But I wouldn't say that I have an itemized yes-no list of the canon, because there isn't one. It's kind of just being formed and reformed as things go on. I mean, it's kind of like the Zelda timeline. You know, oh, sure, there was always a timeline, and here it is now. Just kind of made that up on the fly. Who are we kidding?
Of course.
You know, these long-running franchises, we want to think that there's this beautiful line that connects everything and makes it all make sense. But in the beginning, they were just trying to make a game that sold, you know? They may have had a vision, they may have been passionate about it, but, you know, Mario, Zelda, Star Fox, Sonic, doesn't matter. They were trying to make what would work now, and here we are 25-plus years later, and it's like, oh, this is now a legacy. Not everything is going to fit neatly in retrospect.
Right. They didn't necessarily come up with a 10-year plan like Marvel did for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah,
and even still botched that in a few places.
But even then, that 10-year plan is a very, very new concept in terms of mass media.
Right, absolutely. All right, let's go on to our next question from Aaron. If you didn't go into comics, what would you have done?
I don't know. Because I wanted to get into comics. I got into comics, and I've been doing it ever since. I've had side jobs here and there, but that was only to make a little extra scratch. It was nothing that I was passionate about. I briefly pursued a teaching degree, but learned very quickly that I did not have the temperament for it. Not that I couldn't stand the children. I love kids of all ages. I like being a teacher. I couldn't stand the parents.
Oh, yeah.
If you have a small child throwing a tantrum, that is a moment to teach. If you have an adolescent who's being a problem, that is a time to teach and to guide. When you have a parent that is being a problem, that becomes assault. And I really don't want to go to jail. So I have zero patience for grown folks who ought to know better behaving worse than and corrupting their children. And I knew that that is not the fostering mindset to bring into a teaching zone. So I figured I'm not going to be a good teacher, and I've had a lot of bad teachers. I don't want to be somebody's bad teacher. So that's when my career fell in my lap, and I haven't looked back since.
Yeah. I think, like, the worst thing about kids is their parents in a lot of ways. Some of the more obnoxious things about kids are their parents. So, yeah, I understand. All right, that's it for the priority Q&A for this episode of the Mumblecast. Let's move on into the standard Q&A. First one comes from Blue Streak. Do you think it will ever be possible to see merchandise based on the IDW comic books? I'd love to see figures, t-shirts, and plushes made.
As of today, I learned that there's two more t-shirts coming to the Sega store or through Sega at some point using covers done by Adam Bryce Thomas.
Oh, nice.
And apparently, you know, in the neckline, you know, where the size and everything is, it says something like the comic series of merchandise or apparel or something like that, implying that there will be more comic tie-in stuff down the line, maybe?
Sweet.
So that's encouraging. And, you know, Fan Demand got us a freaking toaster. So if you want to see comic stuff get merchandised, then tell them, you know, go to the live stream, email them directly, tell them on Twitter and whatnot, because they literally listen. They are very receptive. And when I went out west and, you know, was talking to the staff, and they were talking about some of the stuff that's been put on the table, and they get looks of, really? You want to pursue that? And it's like, people want it. So maybe not everything is doable. I don't think we're going to get like a fully articulated Figma of Tangle anytime soon, but, you know, maybe a plush. I don't know. Just if you want it, say so. And it might happen.
I've been wanting posters of, or poster versions of comic covers for forever, back in Archie days. So I would hope that they would do that, because otherwise they're just kind of leaving money on the table, because freaking poster versions of some of these covers, you know, no logos or anything, just have them nice and clean, looking really sharp. I'd throw one of those up on my wall at a second's notice. Come on, Sega, get on it. Or IDW or whoever. Do it. Do it now. All right. Next question comes from Anonymous. This was one in a series of questions that we got via email for quite a while. You've mentioned this on Twitter for years.
At least a dozen, I think.
Yeah. And I think it was like 15, including a recent one. This one comes from Anonymous. I understand that you take part in creating a show called Sonic Underground. I saw the show a couple times as a kid, but the fact that it was canceled and left unresolved leaves me completely heartbroken, and it drives me crazy not knowing how it could end. I'm not asking you to restart the series, but just to finish off from the first series. Thank you.
Okay, Anonymous, I'm going to have to ask that you do a tiny bit of research before you come to us with questions, because a lot of this could have been answered and you could have saved yourself a lot of time. I was in high school when Sonic Underground was being produced. I had no involvement with Sonic Underground. I think your confusion comes from the title Sonic Universe, which is a now defunct sister book to the old Sonic series, where for the anniversary issue, we were going to do a one-shot special that would tell a story that would be kind of a conclusion to Sonic Underground. And as I've said frequently, what is yesterday could be no tomorrow, and we had to very quickly change plans. So I will eventually detail what my thoughts were for that issue in Lost Hedgehog Tales, but it was not an official end to the series. It was just my conjecture. And I have no control whatsoever over Sonic Underground. It ran for one complete season, and that's it. All there is to it. There was no cliffhanger ending. It was just unresolved.
It was produced by Deke, who no longer exists.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure the people who worked on it have either moved on or also no longer.
Sorry you had to wait this long, but again, just about any wiki and my webpage out there would tell you what I have worked on and what the timeline would be. So not to, you know, look down on you or anything, just, you know, the internet is a wonderful resource for information. Please delve in.
All right. And here's one from Rippler on Twitter. Why didn't you cancel Sonic Underground sooner?
Rippler, come on, man. I'm trying to be nice.
Sorry, I had to throw
Why that. You do that to me, man?
I had to throw that one in there. I liked it. Kind of mean.
All right, Kyle, I got one for you this time.
You know what? You know what? Everyone loves Sonic. I just say not everyone loves Sonic Underground. But Sonic Underground has its fans. Everything Sonic has its fans somewhere. Even someone out there liked movie Sonic. So, whatever. It's fine. Let's move on. Anyway, you've got a question for me?
I do. It comes from James M. He says, hey, Kyle. Do you wish a second Spaceballs happened?
Not really. You know what? I like the first one, but it's also Spaceballs is interesting because it's sort of an exercise of how do you do a Star Wars parody, but you haven't actually watched Star Wars? I'm pretty sure what happened was that they just saw a trailer. They saw a trailer for Star Wars. They're like, hey, that looks cool. Hey, that's popular. Hey, we can make a movie about that. We can make a movie making fun of that. And then they turned around and made a movie that was vaguely Star Wars-esque, but also had a lot of other sci-fi elements in it, which was a lot of fun. I do quite enjoy Spaceballs. It's a fun movie, but, you know, it definitely is, like, it's weird, like, what it is. It doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. So, a second Spaceballs, you know, I don't doubt it would have been fun to have another Spaceballs, but, you know, I'm fine with just the one. It's all good. So, that's my answer to that question. Do you think a second Spaceballs should have happened, Ian?
You know, I've never seen the first one all the way through, so I don't really have a good position on it.
Okay, well, you know, it's a fun movie, but it's definitely there comes a point where you kind of realize, like, did they actually watch Star Wars before they started making this movie? I'm not sure they did. Although, I do like Valerie's, I do remember, yeah, Spaceballs 2, The Search for More Money. Yeah, that would have been good. It has nothing to do with Star Wars, but hey. And that's going to do it for the Q&A for this edition of the Bumblecast. The Bumblecast. I can't say the name of my own freaking show.
Before we sign off, and before I lose my voice, I'm going to give a big shout out to all the patrons who continue to make this show a thing. And I hope you stick around after my long, angry rant about a radioactive lizard. Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Connell T., Alex P., Coopling Crew 128, Frederick, Andrew D., Scruffy, Matt, Saturn, Flicky, Chris A., John B., Jennifer R., David C., Reverend the White, Lisa M., Do As Does Den, Dave M., Daniel B., Mike B., Samuel P., Sam Cybercat, Digama F. Wow, Dragon Superfan, Brody M., Neil H., Justin G., Dan M. S., Adam T., Silly String, Takaro, Lee H. K., Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, Taco El Gato Comics, John M., James K., Adam B.T., Overthinking Films, and Ron.
Some new names in there. That's awesome. All right. Where can the people find you, Ian?
Head over to BumbleKing.com. That has my con appearances, my whole body of work, schedules for when my stuff is coming out, all that good stuff. Or check me out on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC. Kyle, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB. I'm also over at KNGI.org, the home of Nitro Game Injection, my other show, which streams live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Be sure to check it out if you're interested in lots of awesome video game music and video game music remixes and other tangentially related video game music stuff. And also head on over there if you're looking for archived versions of the Bumblecast and many other awesome shows that you should also check out.
Follow news and announcements about the Bumblecast over on Twitter at Bumblecast and contact us at bumblecast@yahoo.com.
And don't forget to check out the Bumble Store at shop.spreadshirt.com/Bumble Store to get you some Bumble gear to put on your Bumble head and Bumble body and Bumble hands and Bumble feet. And I don't know. Can you put stuff on your feet from the Bumble Store? Do we have socks?
I don't know if we got socks. You can put anything on your feet. It just may not be recommended.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Put like a Bumble hat on your Bumble feet. That'll be cool.
Get some super extra large mugs if you got dainty toes.
That works.
And also join us Sunday evenings, everybody, not just patrons, but everybody, for Bumblecast Gaming Live, usually Sunday evenings over on YouTube. We'll have links on the Twitter, and we've actually fallen behind because our weekends have been nuts, but we're going to make it up to you. We promise.
All right. And there's also other possible times for Bumblecast Gaming, like how we did the Team Sonic Racing playthrough on the release date, so we had some fun with that. No, keep an eye out, subscribe on YouTube and all that fun stuff so you see what's happening, see what's going on, and tune in if you happen to be around and catch it.
That's going to wrap us up for this Bumblecast. We'll see you in a couple weeks for the next one! Have a good night, everybody.
Boy, there was a lot of rage in that episode. I quite enjoyed it.
I scree-rocked pretty hard. Elise says she hopes her screaming at the basketball game didn't get recorded.
Only like once, I think. But you were talking at the same time, so it was pretty much unintelligible.
Okay, because we do want to keep this a family-friendly show for the most part.
But I know, yes.
You've been listening to The Bumblecast, a co-production of Bumble King Comics and the KNGI Network. Original theme music composed by Ken Coda Snyder. Remixed intro by T-Lopes. Find out more information, along with podcast feeder links, MP3 downloads, and more at BumbleKing.com and KNGI.org.
What inspired a scene where Dr. Eggman poured that Zombot virus all over the city? Was it inspired by that Eggman pisses on the moon meme?
The what?
I don't know. Apparently, it's a meme.
I beg your pardon?
So, I'm guessing the answer is no.
No.
Okay.
What?
No. Okay.
My apologies to Anonymous. Don't go on the internet. It's full of horrible things. What?
Yeah.
No, what?